listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Fantasy Sports Today.
Welcome to Fantasy Sports Today. And like I said in a tweet a couple of minutes ago, at least you know everybody else can tear up their brackets too. A wild day on the court yesterday. All around the NCAA tournament, six lower seeds winning yesterday, where there was only two that won on Thursday. And we're going to talk a lot about that basketball tournament, which I love. It is one of my favorite things to watch each and every year. I actually hung out with a few friends yesterday. We take the Friday every year, the first Friday of that tournament. Take the afternoon off, go out, have a couple of adult beverages, and watch the games. A lot of fun with some friends yesterday. I'm going to bring Kevin Walsh in here to have him give his initial reaction. But, you know, clearly, Kevin, the story of the day and the story of this tournament for this weekend is going to be the fact that the number one overall seed, the Virginia Cavaliers, fall to the Retrievers of UMBC. It was in shocking fashion. I think we all assumed it was going to happen someday, somehow, this would happen. But I didn't expect it to be this team, and I didn't expect it to be in the fashion that it occurred.
It was as wild as it could be. I was telling Corey before the show, the fact that everybody seemed to be so in on this being the year because of the Penn-Kansas matchup, that a part of me felt that it would be right for it to happen this year, but not be the one that everybody was expecting. Like, if we finally had a 16-1 and everybody was like, I told you so, it wouldn't have felt as shocking. But for the number one overall seed to get blown out, mind you, not a close game, they won by 20 points. That felt appropriate. That felt like the perfect way for this to happen for the first time. And honestly, I mean, if we go for another 100 years, then probably, but maybe the only time this ever happens.
Yeah, I mean, as you told me, you know, it's funny now because, I mean, clearly to this point, the number one seed coaches had done a good job of making sure that their seeds took care of business. There's been some tight games, famously the Princeton-Georgetown game that everybody references where it almost happened. You know, that was a unique situation. Princeton plays a very specific style of basketball. They did back then under Pete Carril. And it caught some teams off guard when they met them in the tournament, including Georgetown. But, you know, this UVA team, I filled out several brackets. I did not have them winning any of them. I do have a personal connection connected to that team. Good buddy of mine has a stepson that's on the team. So I feel very badly for them in that regard. A lot of people are laughing at UVA and all that kind of stuff. I don't feel that way personally just because I didn't want my friend to be so bummed out, and I feel bad for those players, but there's nobody to blame but themselves. I did not have UVA winning any of the brackets that I filled out. I do not think that they play a style of basketball that lends itself to winning six games in a row in tight fashion. They play a lot of tight games. I wouldn't suspect them to win the tournament as long as they play this style. They're excellent defensively. They have great ball handlers, and they have good scorers like Jerome and a couple of others. But they don't really get a lot of easy baskets, and it showed in the second half last night. Obviously, they had the worst possible day at the worst possible time, right? But it was 21-21 at halftime. They gave up 53 points in the second half. UMBC was scoring at will, and it just with about 5 minutes left, you could tell it was over.
I think the thing about their identity for Virginia is the best defense in the world will still lose to a lucky offense. Like that's the thing. If a team is just hot as can be, you have to be able to match the offensive output, and that's not what Virginia is based on. Now, obviously, they're not a team that typically shoots 18% from three and 40% from the floor, but still, they would have had to have one of their better offensive games for them to even be keeping this close. And that's why they got blown out, because UMBC clearly played what was their best game of the year. But the thing is, if UMBC puts this type of performance out there in, say, you know, seven times in a seven-game series, I don't know how many times Virginia can actually match it. And that is one of the problems. And also, you have to wonder how much them losing their sixth man of the year maybe messed with their mindset heading into it. I don't know if it had them feeling less confident. I don't know if they were overcompensating, but I'm sure that that could in some way impact their mental. Overall, I just think it is so crazy that it was a blowout. Like, that was the thing that was, like, I was screaming, I they're up 17. They're up 17 with 2 minutes left. This is insane.
Yeah, it just, I was just sort of watching it in stunned fashion. I had gotten home by that point, so I was just watching it in stunned fashion, saying, how are they getting blown out? It just doesn't, it doesn't compute. And I want to take a look at Virginia's other losses on the year. I guarantee they were tight games. You know, you referenced the Penn-Kansas game. That was the lowest spread ever for a 16 seed going up against a one in, since it is expanded to the 64 teams, since 85, I guess it is. So, so in that sense, if you had told me that Penn has a shot, will have a shot in the last minute against Kansas, it was a 14-point spread. It wasn't that tight, but it was the lowest ever. And they ended up covering Kansas. I think they won by 16 on Thursday. But if you had told me that, you know, Penn will squeak out a last-second win against Kansas, I would have doubted it, obviously, but I wouldn't have been in disbelief. And this game just leaves me in complete disbelief. The last game that they lost was against Virginia Tech, which they lost 61-60. So, and their other loss, I'm trying to pull up their
I know it was West Virginia.
So yeah, that one was, let's see. Yeah, the last one, game they lost was 61-60 to Virginia Tech, and the previous loss was on December 5th to West Virginia, 68-61. So,
I mean, that's right there. This team lost two games. We both agree that the style of basketball that they play isn't necessarily conducive to long-term success in an NCAA tournament. But this is clearly the best Tony Bennett team that they've had on campus, I would say, considering the fact that they had lost twice
They're their number one overall seed.
I mean, yeah, that was another thing that I don't remember who had tweeted this out, but it was like, this is a 109-yard kickoff return. You can't actually beat this. Like, this is the number one overall seed. You don't get a bigger upset than that. It's the number one overall seed.
Yeah. So, you know, which effectively means that this is the worst 16 seed. So they're pitting the best team in the tournament against the worst team in the tournament. But, you know, I'm not going to get buried in cliches, but clearly on any given day, anything can happen. But here's a buddy of mine that works at a big time university in the athletic department. I was texting with him this morning, and he said, so what is UVA do now? Because you can say clearly this style doesn't work. So what do we do now? Obviously, we don't expect them to get bounced like this ever again. But it's, as I said, I don't see them winning a tournament with this style of basketball. So what do they do?
I mean, maybe I think that question, though, should more be on Tony Bennett's plate than the ADs deciding if they would want to move on from him. Like, granted, this is as bad as it could have ended, but the first 33 games rarely go any better than 31-32. I mean, what can I? Is this the worst 16 seed? Because I know they have the 16 play-ins. Like that, I thought that's one of the funny, like, ironic things about this is, as people were looking at the South region, they were like, "Man, this is actually really stacked." Like, the 4-5 is going to be a Kentucky or an Arizona, who are both won their conference championships. You had Cincinnati and Tennessee, who were both really strong 2-3s, and then they got taken out by a 16 seed. Like, that to me was pretty funny.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I guess conceivably you're right. So the Texas Southern versus, North Carolina Central game, I suppose that's, you know, that's one of the ones where you would take a look at. Or Radford played,
LIU
Radford
Brooklyn.
Played Nova, LIU Brooklyn. Did they win that game?
No,
LIU,
well,
Brooklyn beat.
Yeah, Radford beat LIU Brooklyn.
Got it. And then lost to Villanova. Got it. Okay. So, in any event, so that's it on UVA. We can keep talking about it, but there really isn't much else to say. They got blown out. It's wild. I think the fashion in which it happened made it just completely stunning. They scored. Let me see this. Yeah, they scored 67 points a game. That's 314th in the country. So, their pace of play became an issue last night when they needed buckets. The fact that here's the craziest stat. I'm sure there's a million crazy stats from this, but this is a crazy one. They give up the least points per game in the country. Best defense in the country. 54 points a game. UMBC scored 53 in the second half.
Yep, that lets you know how this one went. I mean, that's insane.
That's insane.
In a half.
I mean, they play in the ACC, and they were holding teams in the 50s regularly. Mm-hmm. You know, just look down their schedule here. Yeah, they held Clemson to 58 points, Louisville to 58 points, Notre Dame to 57 points. They held Pitt to 37 points a couple weeks ago.
Right.
54, 50, 55, 44. They held Syracuse to. They held Clemson to 36 in the other game that they played. It's wild that the buckets came so fast and furious. So, all right, so that's it on UVA. I don't want to spend 3 hours talking about them, but we're going to get into the other games as well. So clearly yesterday was very entertaining. Not that the first day wasn't entertaining at all. Arizona got dumped in another sort of game that wasn't all that tight.
That game, I mean, it's probably because of just how I picked it, because I had Arizona in my bracket. I thought that they were going to win the whole thing. So when they were losing, I seemed to be more shocked than when Virginia was losing, but perhaps because at that point I had completely given up on all things bracket-related and was just excited about it. But Arizona getting obliterated by Buffalo, I was in awe of that result.
Yeah, that was a shocker to me as well. I did not have Arizona. I did a March Madness show earlier this week with Blackjack Fletcher, who's a handicapper from Barstool Sports, and Gabe Morency, who you can find here on the network. By the way, if you want to reach out to us, please do so on Twitter at FNTSY Radio. I'm at Mike Blewett. Kevin is at the Kevin Walsh. So we'll probably put a couple of polls up today. It's not going to be something obvious like, hey, were you shocked by the upset last night? Like, obviously, everybody's shocked. But Blackjack had Arizona winning the whole thing. They had just won the Pac-12 tournament. People thought that this controversy was going to galvanize them. I didn't really believe in that narrative. I had them losing to either Kentucky or Virginia in most of my brackets that I did. I think I did 4 or 5 brackets, but I had UVA in the Final Four in a couple of them. So my bracket is as damaged as anybody else's. But if you have Cincinnati or Tennessee or Kentucky, or UMBC, you're in good shape in your brackets. But clearly a lot of people are going to just be done with Arizona and UVA. So that region.
You want to talk about being in trouble, though.
That's the South region, right?
Yeah, that's the South. But you want to talk about being in trouble, like Virginia having to ask themselves some questions? Arizona has zero recruits next year. They, in all likelihood, have to fire Sean Miller, not because of the FBI controversy, but because he just got bounced by Buffalo with arguably his most talented team. Raleigh Alkins, Alonzo Trier, and obviously DeAndre Ayton is going, but all three of them are likely gone to the next level. Risich, I believe, is graduating. Like, Arizona could be one of the worst Pac-12 teams next year, comfortably. Like, they are in a bad spot.
They're in a bad spot in a million different ways, too. It's an entirely different scenario than what happened to UVA.
Mm-hmm.
UVA is just results-based, and they're obviously not going to fire Tony Bennett. It's not going to go that way. He may have to have some tough decisions as to style of play, but those are going to be internal discussions, and you know, we won't know until we see it on the court next year. As far as Arizona is concerned, guilty or not, as you're saying, he could be fired. Guilty of what he's accused of or not, he could be fired. just based on the fact that they've lost in the first round twice in the last 3 years.
I think you'd have to fire him, no? I mean, at the end of the, like, if you're, because he's not bringing you any recruits. Like, normally when you fire a coach, you run the risk then of not being able, I think that just happened with Pitt. I think they just fired their coach and they lost a ton of recruits. For Arizona, there's really no risk involved. There are no recruits coming next year. They lost Shaq's son. They lost everybody that was on the board. So I don't see any way that Sean Miller is the head coach of Arizona next year. And I don't see any way that Arizona is able to sniff the March Madness next year.
Yeah, why would you? I mean, if you're a player, why would you go there now? There's only guy that you're going to be able to get is a guy that wasn't going to be in the Pac-12 prior to this controversy, right? You're going to have to take a player that's maybe outside of the Pac-12 talent pool.
You're looking at grad students and things of that nature. It's going to be really bad for Arizona next year. It's going to be really bad.
So a couple of the other, we're going to keep talking about March Madness after we get a break here in a minute. But clearly we had some other upsets yesterday. We had 6 lower seeds win. So that was Marshall took out Wichita State. That's Mike D'Antoni's brother, the head coach there at Marshall. I had that in a couple of brackets. I wasn't in love with Wichita State. I'm not saying I know a ton about Marshall basketball, but when you're going through and trying to pick some upsets, I went with Marshall in a couple of brackets. Let me see, the other lower seeds at one, Butler, had them over Arkansas. They won comfortably, 79-62. They were up like 18-2 in that game, and then Arkansas came all the way back to make it tight at halftime, and then they pulled away in the second half. Nevada, Texas, that was a good overtime game we had yesterday. Kansas State is a lower seed, but that's a 9-8. Bucknell played Michigan State tight. I actually didn't get a chance to watch any of that game yesterday. Auburn, Charleston was close. I had Charleston in that one, but nonetheless a tight game. Syracuse dumps TCU. So Syracuse on a little bit of a run here after the play-in game. So that's 11-6. Obviously UMBC over UVA. And then we also had... the last one was Florida State taking out Missouri. Florida State looked terrible in the ACC tournament last week, and they come back. They bounce back for the NCAA tournament. We're going to come back, talk about those games, get to some NFL free agency later on Fantasy Sports Today on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We'll be right back.
The RotoExperts.com exclusive Edge Fantasy Baseball Package for 2018 is here and better than ever. Packed with a deluxe suite of articles from our award-winning analysts, this year's edition also features a brand new Slack channel, an improved cheat sheet generator, and our most accurate projections ever. We take you from draft day to championship week. Enter promo code FNTSY at checkout for a discount on your RotoExperts.com exclusive Edge Fantasy Baseball Package.
Hey there, everybody. It's me, Joe Pizzapia. Baseball is back, and that means the Fantasy Baseball Black Book is back as well. It's me. It's Paul Spohr writing starting pitching profiles. It's Jake Seeley. It's Sammy Reed writing DFS. It's a whole lot of greatness right here for you. You can get the new Fantasy Black Book for baseball on Amazon, on iTunes. You can get it in paperback. You can get it for your Kindle. You can get it anywhere you want, but make sure you get it, because once you go Black Book, you never go back.
Watch Craig Carton live, the top 8 at 9 on Twitch.tv from the Fantasy Sports Network Studio 34 every Monday through Thursday at 9 o'clock Eastern. Do you want to be a part of the show? Take part in the Twitch chat room and give me your opinions, or call in 844-84-FNTSY. Go to Twitch.tv/Craig Carton live and get in on the action. Come get some. It's Craig Carton live, the top 8 at 9, only on Twitch.tv.
The fan-controlled Football League is making fantasy football a reality. Like a real-life version of Madden, fans will vote on all personnel decisions and play calls in real time, and what the fans say goes. Visit FCFL.io to learn more. The FCFL, where you're in control.
Welcome back to Fantasy Sports Today. Mike Blue and Kevin Walsh here until noon Eastern. Talking about March Madness. We're going to get to NFL free agency in the second hour. We'll talk some baseball in the third hour. And obviously hit us up on Twitter at FNTSY Radio. If you want to give us a call, it's 84FNTSY. I'm at Mike Blewett. Kevin is at the Kevin Walsh. And one other thing to mention to you is, oh, here it is. Get your rotoexperts.com exclusive Edge Fantasy Baseball Package now. This year's version is packed with more analysis than ever and includes a new all-day chat channel. Get prepped for draft day with our deep pool of stats and projections and an improved cheat sheet generator. Get rankings from the top guy in all of fantasy, Jake Seeley. Tips from award winner Tim McCullough and insider insights from Hall of Famer Scott Engel. Enter code FNTSY at checkout for a discount on this year's Roto Experts Exclusive Edge Fantasy Baseball Package. So go over there and get it. We're going to be talking about an article from that package in hour number three. So a little bit about BABIP and how you can use that to maybe find some hidden gems in your draft this year and what it all means. So it was really informative as I was reading it. So it could be helpful to you too in your fantasy baseball drafts. So I rattled off a bunch of scores, Kev, at the end of the segment there. But, you know, one other game that popped out to me, obviously, was Cuse. I didn't even have them beating Arizona State, and they kind of handled Arizona State, and now they upend Jamie Dixon and TCU. It's a bummer, a bad way to go out of the tournament for TCU. The Big 12's got a couple of teams left. I wasn't as big on the conference as some other people were, and certainly not as big as the committee was, but TCU gets dumped there after a pretty good season for them.
I wasn't too surprised that Cuse was able to get in as far as the play-in goes and then winning this game, just because they have the track record. I think Boeheim's earned that respect. And they've did this, I think it was 2 years back. I know. I just remember them being able to draw Middle Tennessee, and they were able to upset Michigan State. So I think they were an 11 or 12 playing up against like a 15, so that worked in their favor.
They ran up against
Gonzaga, I think, or something along those lines. But I know they made a run like that.
They went to the Final Four that year.
Well, yeah, so
I watched it.
They've made a run.
I was at that Final Four and when they went to Houston, so they played.
You were there?
I was.
I was as well.
Were you?
Yeah.
I was there, yeah. It was before we knew each other. It's crazy.
I thought Buddy Hield would have a better performance. That didn't work.
They got blown out by North Carolina, and Oklahoma got trounced by Villanova. So those semifinal games that year were terrible, and it was made up for by the fact that the Monday night game, which I was also at, was the best.
See, that's
the
thing.
It was the last second shot by Chris Jenkins.
I didn't get to go to the championship game. I flew out. So that was the thing that I always found funny was it was still incredible to just be there. It was my first time I ever had gone to the Final Four, but it was like those were two of the least competitive Final Four games I've seen that led up to maybe the best national championship game, certainly one of the best national championship games that's ever been played, at least in terms of how the ending went.
That was an awesome game because there was a lot. Villanova was up like 11 with 4 minutes to go. And Carolina tied it with 8 seconds left. But that was enough for the final play. Obviously, when Chris Jenkins knocks down the jumper. But I'm going to be going to the Final Four this year, too, which is in San Antonio. Nice. I also made the one in Atlanta a few years ago. The one in Atlanta, I did not stay for the championship game. I went to Louisville, beat Wichita, and then Syracuse was in that as well. Syracuse lost to... I want to say, who did Louisville beat?
So you're telling me now that Syracuse is on their way to the Final Four since you're going again, is what you're telling me.
It's weird. I'm not even a fan of Syracuse. I've rooted against them my entire life.
That's how they got you.
Been to two Final Fours, and now things may open up for them. But now they have to play Michigan State. That'll be a tough one. But that Michigan State game, so I did not get a chance to watch that one. I think I was in transit when that game was going on. So Bucknell played them tight. Any thoughts on that game or any of the others that you watched yesterday?
I caught a good bit of that game just because for me, I've always had college basketball, to me, was always more about the prospects. That's just how it's always been. And then the tournament time comes, and obviously I'm very excited about it, but I'm still always looking up the prospects. So they have Miles Bridges and Jaren Jackson, who are a pair of lottery players. I thought they looked good. Obviously, the game wasn't as out of reach as they would have liked, but I think if one of the clear things is if you look at the three-point shooting, where Bucknell was 11 of 20, so that's 55%, and on the other end, Michigan State was 5 of 17, so that's under 30%, and they were still able to hold them off. They're as talented a team, I think, is in the country. I think right now, I would probably pick them to win the whole thing. I just feel confident in their talent there. Like, I think when you're able to play a bad game and still win, That shows how good of a team they are. Because I don't think Bucknell played bad at all. And I thought Michigan State did not play anywhere near their best game, and they were still able. They always felt in control for me for that game.
Okay, yeah. So I get that. I respect that. A lot of people did have Sparty going all the way. I've seen a lot of brackets, and there's a lot of talk of that. Although we did the show the other night, and I probably have him in the Final Four in one of my brackets, but they were such a trendy pick, as I was listening to a lot of analysts and watching a lot of analysts, that it scared me away from them. Mm-hmm. You know, when it comes down to it, I just try to pick a few. I do have the Big Ten doing well in this tournament, and I have them doing well. I just don't have them winning the whole thing. I did the show, March Madness show, on Monday night, as I mentioned earlier. Craig Carton was on that show with Gabe Morency, Blackjack Fletcher, and Greg Sussman, actually. Carton hosted, and Greg and I analyzed, and the other two were giving handicap advice, which they had some good advice there. Blackjack Fletcher picking Arizona, not the best, but you should really go to their Twitter handles to find, you know, sort of updated picks and first half spreads, and they'll give you some tidbits for the games that are upcoming. So, in any event,
do you find yourself?
I do have them doing well, but I had Purdue winning the whole thing.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because
I like Purdue.
So
I do
many
think
people
that they've been overlooked.
So many people are picking Villanova there. I just wanted to go in a different direction. They have four seniors starting, along with Carson Edwards, sophomore, who's All-American talent. So I just kind of like that. Unfortunately, Haas, their center, broke his elbow yesterday during the game. In a scramble, he fell to the ground and like clutched his elbow, and it turns out he fractured his elbow. He's out for the rest of the tournament. So I do think that will severely impact their chances to win the whole thing.
Who are they drawing up against next round? And Butler's a team that could certainly give them the blues.
I know. Butler is a tough second round matchup, so I'm not suggesting that they're going to lose that game necessarily, but I don't see any way that they'll get past Butler. And then who else is in that side? Nova is going to be on the top side. That would be the Elite Eight matchup.
Florida, Texas Tech, I believe.
Yeah. That was a great game the other night. The Texas Tech game was one of the best games.
We were texting about that.
Yeah. That was a wild game because. Who was that? It's so crazy,
Austin,
when you watch the 30 games. Yeah, Stephen F. Austin. So I had Stephen F. Austin in, like, every bracket. I just thought that the Big 12 teams, as a 3 seed, historically have done really poorly. I think they've lost 4 of 11 games up against those 14 seeds. So I saw maybe a little bit of an upset there. I think Kansas famously lost to Bucknell years ago, and there's been a bunch of others since. So that game, Stephen F. Austin was sort of in control at one point and then didn't score in the last 5.5 minutes or so, I believe it was.
Mm-hmm.
And Texas Tech pulled away. It was odd because I thought Stephen F. Austin was going to win. At one point in the second half, it looked like they were going to win, correct?
No, I thought they had it. So that was the thing. It was a rough start to the day for me, but I was sitting there watching SF Austin that I thought they were going to pull through, and I also had San Diego State making a little bit of a run. I thought that they were going to be able to take down Houston and Michigan, and they were both incredibly close, and neither pulled through. And I was like, man, that's going to really hurt. Arizona then lost later that night, which I was like, okay, so none of this matters. But I thought SF Austin really had it. I just, you know, I always read those little blurbs that they have as you're making the picks on the websites and stuff like that. And, you know, you go through as much as you can. Sometimes you catch up because, I mean, if we're being honest, nobody's sitting here watching 30 SF Austin games throughout the year. Yeah. And it just, it looked like a really strong pick. Also, the fact that Texas Tech's best player just wasn't 100%. So I liked it, and I thought it was there, and it just fell through.
Yeah, it just in the last 5 minutes, they didn't score a field goal, and Texas Tech pulled away. And Texas Tech had all these highlight dunks. Super athletic team. I had seen them play during the year, but, man, they had like three or four highlight reel dunks. And that game was in Dallas. The place was going nuts. So all Texas Tech fans had showed up, and that place was wild by the end of that game.
Did any team grab your attention that you had them losing within the round of 64, and now you're kind of looking at them a little bit differently?
I'll say, I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know that anybody really changed. Here's what I'll say: Tennessee, it blew out Wright State. Mm-hmm. It's a Horizon League team, so you could say they're a 3 seed. They took care of business, but I did not give them a lot of respect in the tournament, and I had been thinking about it since I filled out my brackets. I was like, man, if Tennessee goes on a run here, I'm gonna be done. And I'm starting to wonder if I was really wrong about that. It's just one game. They're gonna go up against tougher opponents in subsequent rounds. I can't remember. I think they're gonna play Loyola next. And I had Loyola beating Miami in all of my brackets. I just thought that was the right pick there. They're a top 25 RPI team, despite the fact that they play in the Missouri Valley, which doesn't get a ton of respect, especially since Wichita left. Ironic that Wichita loses yesterday. But I'm just wondering if Tennessee can get on a run here, beat Loyola, and then beat Cincinnati potentially, or Nevada or whomever. And then that bracket has been really blown up. I'll say this. I have Loyola in the Sweet 16 in several brackets, whether they were playing Tennessee. I didn't have Tennessee losing to Wright State, but I had Tennessee losing in the round of 32 in several brackets to either Loyola. To Loyola just about every time. So I'll be pulling for the Ramblers on that day. Obviously, you know, some of the other upsets that we're looking at, the Marshall over Wichita State. Marshall sort of had their number, you know, in the second half. They just outplayed Wichita in the second half. I watched a lot of that game.
Yeah, I wasn't too surprised by that. I play in a knockout pool. You pick a team each day, can't pick them again. You got to get down to the eventual champion, saving everything. And I had three different, and, I was sharing, and I took West Virginia, and I felt good about that. And then I had Wichita there, and I didn't feel as good about it, but I thought they'd pull through. I was nervous about Marshall, but then Marshall took that one, and that was just another bad start to what's been a brutal NCAA tournament for things that I've been picking so far. I started it off as well with taking Kentucky on the opening day, and now as I look through, Kentucky's path to a potential spot in the Final Four is a lot different than what I thought it would be, because obviously in this type of setting, basically, if you pick a team on the day you pick them, you're expecting them to lose the next round. That's the most ideal scenario. And now the way Kentucky set up, I mean, obviously not to discount Buffalo, but right now Kentucky's going to be the favorite until the next games that they will play up until at least the Elite Eight if they're able to make it that far.
Gabe Morency on the show the other day, he brought a pretty good point. Like, in selecting brackets, he likes to look for teams that are uber talented but might have underachieved. Those are the types of teams he feels that can get on a run. And we sorted out UCLA and Kentucky as two of those teams. Obviously, we're wrong in UCLA. They didn't even win their play-in game against St. Bonnie's. But Kentucky is that type of team, right? Very talented team, probably underachieved. People saying, it's not a vintage Kentucky team. But maybe these kids, who are obviously there's a bunch of pro basketball players on mm-hmm. that roster, could put it all together. Now Virginia gets knocked out. They could be seen, you know, Loyola is on the bottom part of the bracket, but you never know.
Well,
it could line up for them to have go on a run here and wind up in San Antonio.
Yeah, so I cheer for Kentucky, so I probably watch more of their games than anybody else in this tournament. And it's not their usual, like, five guys leaving for the lottery type of group. They were starting five freshmen. They were as young as ever. And Coach Cal's done an amazing job. But I was looking at the next matchups for them, and they do not have an answer for DeAndre Ayton on their roster. And then I was looking past that, and it's just they're so young. I didn't see how they were going to be able to handle the pressure of Virginia. Now, obviously, you look at it, and both of those teams got upset big time, so maybe Kentucky would have been able to handle them, but I do think that that was big for Kentucky to be able to avoid those teams because I think that they presented a lot of the problems that would have been tough for them to overcome.
Yeah, so Gilgeous Alexander's a hell of a player. We'll come back. Keep talking March Madness on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. It's Mike Bluen and Kevin Walsh. We'll be back after this.
The victories begin. January, the Fantasy Sports Writers Association named Roto Experts winners of two prime fantasy baseball awards. Tim McCullough and Scott Angle joined champion fantasy ranker Jake Seeley on the mountaintop, and now their triumphs are yours with the RotoExperts.com 2018 Exclusive Edge Fantasy Baseball Package. A full squad of high-profile winners such as Michael Florio and Joe Galina, they're here to help you take it all. Enter code FNTSY at checkout and join the Exclusive Edge Winners Club at RotoExperts.com.
Why pay high rake when you can play daily fantasy baseball and pay half the rake on Fantasy Draft? Featuring half the rake GPP and head-to-head contests, exclusive VIP experiences, and the most flexible lineup structures in the game, Fantasy Draft is the only DFS site that puts players first. They're also the only site to offer 6 of 7 PGA scoring, dropping your lowest golfer's score. Register today with the code FNTSY for a free $4 entry into a guaranteed winner contest in the sport of your choice. Fantasy Draft, daily fantasy on a level playing field.
Back on Fantasy Sports Today, Mike Bluen and Kevin Walsh. The schedule for the remainder of the day is we're here until noon. Then from 12 to 3, you're going to have Tony Cincotta and Joe Galina doing weekend fantasy update. And then from 3 to 6, I believe it's In This League with Bogman and the Welsh. And then you know, Corey with Fantasy Football Frenzies on there with Tony Cincotta. I think Fantasy Freestyle is later today as well. So I'll give you a sense of what's on tap for today. So let's take a look, Kev, moving forward. We did a bunch of recapping, but let's look at today's games and some potential matchups over the weekend. You started talking about Kentucky against Buffalo. Buffalo obviously played a great game the other night. Kentucky had all they could handle from Davidson, but as you said, maybe Coach Cal's gotten these guys to the point where he needs them. You know, there's an old, old cliche about when freshmen get a chance to play this much by the end of the year, they're not really freshmen anymore. You know, they've played 30 odd games, and maybe they're starting to gel a little bit, or maybe the players have matured somewhat. Gilgeous Alexander is awesome. He's just a fun player to watch.
I actually think that he has a chance to push for the first point guard off the board because of how much people have fallen on the Trae Young after he lost the other day. A lot of people are coming out with reports that there's like executives that don't think he's a lottery pick, which I think is absurd, but that's not what we're here for. But I think that Gilgeous Alexander, it's actually one of the more remarkable things to happen in terms of Kentucky prospects because he wasn't even pinned to be the lead, not even their best player, but he wasn't even supposed to be their first point guard. He started the year on the bench, and then he made the switch. Quade Green now comes off the bench, but sometimes they'll play off one another. So it's actually been probably the most crucial thing for them is just finding out that Shai Gilgeous-Alexander was their best player. And there's really no other way about it. He's their best player. I think the X factor, though, normally turns out to be Kevin Knox because they know what they're going to get from Gilgeous Alexander. You've got guys like Wenyen Gabriel that can come and give you the spark from deep, and Quade Green's going to play good defense, but Knox is a guy who can give you 25 points. He can give you that big burst, a more of a pure scorer than some of the other players on this Kentucky basketball team. So to me, he remains the X factor. As far as a prediction for this game, I feel confident that Kentucky will be able to handle Buffalo, although Buffalo is really no slouch. They put that fully on display.
Yeah. You're an Iona guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
What happened? why didn't they come with the upset?
What happened? Marvin Beck.
First of all, you're talking about Kentucky. You're talking about you're a Kentucky fan. I'm thinking to myself, hey, what's up with Tim Clueis and your boys?
Well, listen, Tim Clueis, he runs the MAC, and that is about it. Here's the thing. When they drew Duke, I was like, this is great, because now I don't have to foolishly pick them in the first round of my bracket, because I do it every year. And it's not because I'm like, oh, I would be disloyal if I didn't. I just always convince myself it's going to happen. So I didn't pick them anywhere. But then the game started, and I was like, oh, my God, Iona can't miss. Maybe there's something there. The problem was Duke also couldn't miss.
Yeah.
And the fact
that
Trevon Duval, who objectively is a bad shooter, was 4 of 5 from three, but started out the game 3 for 3 from deep. Right there, I was like, oh, okay. So this is we're going to at some point get cold, and then their actual good shooters will keep knocking down threes. And I knew the thing about Iona is they never have bigs. They try kind of the 4-out, 1-in, and the problem is the 1-in is normally a 6'8" athlete. Like, at best, that's what you have, and that's what TK Adoge is. And he's had a really good year for the Gales. The problem is, that's no match for a pair of top 10 picks in Wendell Carter Jr. and Marvin Bagley III.
Yeah, they're going to be tough to deal with. And I think it's going to be tough for URI to deal with them today. URI is actually a good basketball team, but matchup of styles may not be great for them. They don't have anybody inside to deal with this either. URI is a good team. I just think they drew badly here. They are actually the type of 7 seed that I could have seen going on a run, but I don't see them beating Duke today. They're a 9.5-point dog right now. Anything can happen. I don't think this is a vintage Duke team, just as much as it's not a vintage Kentucky team. It doesn't mean that Duke and or Kentucky can't rip off a few games here in this tournament, and I just think URI's got a bad matchup here. So one of the other games today is Alabama against Villanova. Obviously, people are in love with Colin Sexton, but do you see any way that Nova could get bounced? They have lost in this game before under Jay Wright. In fact, last year they lost in the round of 32. Do you see that happening this year?
I feel confident in Nova, but I saw a tweet yesterday that it raised an eyebrow, and it was, is Colin Sexton going to be Kemba Walker this tournament? And of all the players, he's probably the one with the most potential to make something like that happen as far as guys who are left. Maybe Trae Young could have done something like that, but I don't think he had enough around him to make that happen. Obviously, he got bounced by Rhode Island. But there's enough talent around Sexton to where they can pick up the pieces in some parts, but he probably would have to average close to maybe, you know, at least over 25 the rest of the way. And he's got that certainly in his bag. The problem comes for Alabama is this isn't really so much about having enough offense. Like, I think that they can score with anybody. It's being able to stop a team as potent as Villanova. It's been widely talked about, the most efficient offense in the country. You've got Jalen Brunson, who's, I know, a strong candidate for Player of the Year. Mikal Bridges, who's also a potential or probable lottery pick, but is also an incredible basketball player. And that's really tough to deal with.
Yeah. Do you think Bridges gets drafted in front of Brunson? He probably does,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, absolutely. Bridges has the type of skill set to where if he continues to put this on display throughout the tournament, I think he's got a real chance to crack the top 7. We spoke about this actually last week when we had Cole.
The Bridges thing is confusing too, by the way, between Mikhail and Michael and Miles at Michigan State. I think people are constantly confusing them and confusing me. So in any event. Sorry to interrupt there, but just
no,
the Bridges
thing.
I had to get that off my chest.
We were talking last week to Cole Zwicker kind of about, you know, where Mikal Bridges doesn't have that ability to kind of be the best player on really like a playoff contender, but he is built in a lab for what you need in the NBA, where he's the epitome of a 3-and-D guy, where he can guard 1 through 4 with an insane wingspan and is shooting the 3-ball about 40%. And listen, that's incredibly desired at the NBA, but it's also insanely valuable in college basketball. Where the defensive versatility for him is, you'll see him matched up on both Colin Sexton and John Petty, and he'll be giving them probably a ton of trouble.
Yeah. So what else we got? Seton Hall taking on Kansas. Kansas, I think, was disrespected by a fair amount of analysts and people picking their brackets that are located outside of the state of Kansas. So I hedged with them. I actually have Kansas doing pretty well in this tournament, and I don't see them losing this game to Seton Hall today.
I think the only thing would be, because they were able to get away
with a 4.5-point spread, by the way.
I think it has to do with the interior, because Azubuike obviously isn't healthy. They only had to play him 3 minutes up against Penn. But Angel Delgado is a monster inside. I think he might be like the all-time leader in rebounds in the Big East, something along those lines. Like he's going to be a monster on the glass for this game. So I think it's going to be a good one. The problem for me is when I originally was making picks, I actually had NC State beating Seton Hall. So this is kind of a matchup where I actually think that this is the less appealing matchup for Kansas, because the fact that Azubuike is not healthy and the problems that Delgado can offer inside. I don't think I would pick Seton Hall, but I think that the 4.5 spread actually, that's not that bad.
Yeah. Loyola, Tennessee, obviously we talked a little bit about that already. I'm going to have Loyola moving on here just because I'm going to stick with my bracket, but I'm on record as saying I think I probably improperly underrated Tennessee. Mm-hmm. They've been a ranked team for a majority of the year, 26-8. Obviously, they're still the goose egg all time for the SEC tournament wins, but you know they went up against Kentucky. Kentucky played really well in that tournament. So we'll see what happened. That's my upset special. Ohio State, Gonzaga. A lot of people had South Dakota State knocking out Ohio State in that 5-12. Did any of the 12s win? Now that I'm thinking back.
Kentucky Ohio
won.
State,
Ohio State
West
won.
West Virginia
won.
And Clemson won as well. Yeah, no 12.
Yeah, so I did not pick any of the 12s. I did not pick any of the 12s in most of my brackets. I probably threw in a South Dakota State there only because I had Gonzaga winning this game no matter what. But I did not love the 12s against the 5s this year. I did like a couple of the 11s and the 13s, so I went with Marshall and Loyola and Charleston, and a couple of those hit. So, you know, the 5-12 thing is just kind of one of those quirky deals, but you know, this year I just didn't see it happening. Florida up against Texas Tech, that could be an interesting one. Well, let's do Ohio State Gonzaga first. How do you see that one shaping out?
The thing is, I wasn't overly impressed with either of these teams coming out from their earlier performances. I'm giving Gonzaga the edge out of respect for Mark Few, who I think is still one of the best coaches in college basketball. And really, that's what it boils down to. And perhaps, you know, them getting the scare from, I think it was UNC Greensboro, they can kind of maybe turn that into a more fired up performance, because they were probably less encouraging
terribly
than Ohio State was in the first round.
I agree. They did not play well at all. And UNCG had them. They had them dead to rights. But Gonzaga was able to pull it out late. So we'll see there. Ohio State, a little bit of a sloppy team, but it wouldn't stun me if they beat Gonzaga, especially after the way Gonzaga played the other night. Florida, Texas Tech. I mentioned how Texas Tech had a bunch of highlight reel plays the other night, and they played it tight. They won that game by 10, but I can assure you, if you didn't get a chance to watch it, that game was tight until the last couple of minutes, and Stephen F. Austin just couldn't hit a bucket. So Texas Tech going up against Florida. Texas Tech is a 1.5-point favorite in this one. I'll be honest, I don't know much about this Florida team. It's obviously not as good as last year's team, which lost in the Elite Eight to South Carolina, I believe. So what are your thoughts on this game?
I actually like Florida here. I mean, part of that maybe comes from the fact that I thought that Florida was going to be playing SF Austin in this spot. But I just thought when you compare the first round performances, Texas Tech struggled with a 14, while the Bonaventures, who I think they looked pretty good in their game up against UCLA, they had no answers for Florida. I liked Florida actually coming into this tournament. I thought that they were underrated because a lot of people thought that they would lose their 6-11 matchup, and I actually thought that they would play better than that. I thought they were playing some decent basketball coming into the tournament, and I thought that they would be able to package that into a couple of wins.
I think I have UCLA advancing out of that little that little mini bracket there. So clearly, That part of the bracket for me is all messed up. But it's mainly because I have Purdue doing well in this tournament. So picking a couple of early round upsets wasn't going to impact my bracket significantly. So we shall see. Houston going up against Michigan. That is the late game tonight, 9:40 p.m. By the way, games tip off at 12:10. That's the Bama Nova game, and we'll continue throughout the day with this last one, 9:40. It's a late start. It's in Wichita, too. It's odd to have a West Coast game on earlier, but in any event, Houston against Michigan in this one.
You know, I was curious if the long layoff from the Big Ten tournament was going to burn any of these Big Ten teams. And Michigan started really slow in their game against Montana. I think it was 10-0 early. Now, I didn't think at any point Montana was going to be able to actually beat them. But I'm curious if that was the only reason for their slow start. And now they're going to be able to kind of pick it up. Because I was impressed with Houston in their game. It was close, but I think that San Diego State was a really strong 11-7. They were playing incredible basketball coming into the tournament. So, I honestly kind of like Houston in this one.
Yeah, that would be interesting. I think they're one of the teams where I probably didn't have them doing all that well because I'm a believer in Beilein. I think he is a great coach, and he's got a couple of guys here that are playing well at the right time of year. Yes, they got off to a slow start, but I would attribute that to the layoff. I didn't know how some of these Big Ten teams would do, but, I mean, so far so good, right? Purdue, Michigan State, Michigan, and Ohio State all won. How many teams did they have? Ohio State won, Michigan State, Purdue, they all won. Am I missing anybody? Did they only have four? They had more than four teams, right?
Ohio State.
Do you know that? I'm not looking at the bracket at the moment. Let me go over to that. But
I thought that it was going to cost one of these teams, but I think that they're actually good. They also, I think, do have less teams than I thought that they had.
Yeah. So, yeah. Michigan, Ohio State in that one bracket. The one up top, you have none. And then you got... Purdue, and then Michigan State.
That's all they got?
I didn't realize they only had four teams. That is a really light year for them. But in any event, I think I just, that's spaced on that. But in any event, so there you go. Michigan against Houston. I do have Michigan doing pretty well. I have the Big Ten actually doing well in this tournament, despite the fact that they're not well represented. I just feel like the teams that are in there can do pretty well. Michigan State, it wouldn't stun me at all if they got to the Final Four. I hedged against and went with Kansas there. But I think I had... I might have even had Michigan in the Final Four in the bracket that I did on the show on Monday. I just, look, I'm trying to win some cash, right? So I split it up. On the show, I picked Purdue to win it all over UVA. So that's done. The rest of the brackets, I picked different champs. I have a Duke. I have a Villanova. I have a bunch of other ones as well. So in any event, that's the last game of the day. Sit back, relax on a Saturday if you can, and watch the games. They'll be on for literally 11 hours straight. So good times and fun to talk about this time of year. We'll probably do another hour on it next week as well. But we're going to flip the page and talk about NFL free agency in hour number two. Kirk Cousins is having a great weekend. I can assure you that. As are some other guys that got signed. We're going to recap that and talk about it in fantasy terms after this on Fantasy Sports Today with Mike Blewett and Kevin Walsh. Join us after the break on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.